Freak4Radio.com.
Grace Rio Silver was found. Grace Rio Silver was founded in 1997. Our goal today remains the same as it was back then, to provide you, our customer, with a quality buckle. Call today and visit with one of our family design experts about your next trophy buckle. From 1 to 100, each is individually made by hand, one at a time. Remember, at Grace Rio, our only limit is your imagination. Grace Rio Silver, Llano, Texas. 800-550-7535. Or you can find us on the web at TraceRioSilver.com. Proud to be a part of She's Gone Country with Becky.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Discover the mysteries of cosmetic dentistry. For all the insider tips and wellness solutions, tune in to Get Your Smile On with Dr. Joel Gould, Wednesdays at 7 p.m.
She's Gone Country with Becky is proud to have as our charity team Western Wishes, making the dreams of seriously ill children and young adults who love the Western way of life to come true. Western Wishes, leaving the legacy of goodwill the cowboy way. Find out more at westernwishes.org.
This is 4Radio, a media platform used to elevate voices and empower dreams.
All right, rodeo fans, it's time for She's Gone Country with the CB Cowgirl. Introducing your host, Becky Christensen, and co-host, Becky Christensen O'Shield. Hey, let's ride.
A little bit about She's Gone Country with the CB Cowgirl. We are a internet radio show, and we broadcast live on Monday nights at 6 o'clock on Blog Talk Radio. And we are everything about the stories behind the stories. We're all about keeping the heart and the spirit of the American cowboy alive by sharing those stories of everyday cowboys and cowgirls. A little bit about, well, my co-host, Vicki, is not here today, so I just wanted to say that I will miss her today. She actually is playing grandma duties today and is out at the South Point for the Justin Crisis Fund fashion show that is put on by Stacy Custer and a group of them over there. And so Pecos is out there auctioneering. He's just 10, so that's pretty cool. So with me today, my co-host, event management extraordinaire, Mr. Kevin Contardo. Kevin, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it once again.
It's always good to have moral support on the stage with you. So real quick, I want to also bring up, we have so many great vendors here in the show, and I know some of you come here year after year, and so you sometimes might not be able to catch the new vendors that are here this year. So I want to do a new vendor highlight. So I'm going to bring Tamara up from D3 Rifts, and I wanted to highlight her really cool product that she's got going on. She's new here this year, and so being here my second year, I know what it's like to be new, and I just wanted to welcome her to the show and let her highlight real quick what her product is all about.
Thank you, Becky. So I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I ride motorcycles. And I found a need to protect my legs from the heat of the motorcycles. So I was wearing a pair of half chaps that fit like a tube, and they were very uncomfortable. So I went out and I cut apart boots until I've got a pattern that fits snugly over your shoe. Over any shoe. So they're not only for safety, but they're for fashion. And Dale bought a pair in Sturgis, and he also ranches. So everybody was telling us we needed to go to the rodeo and show everybody our products.
And I just thought they were so cool and fashionable and versatile, I had to bring her up to let her see them. She's going to be a new partner with us.
So we have men's and women's. And the men are going crazy over them because they're all ranchers and they ride through the mystique. And we also have knee guards that are detachable. Dale will show you. But we custom fit them because everybody has a different size leg. So So we custom fit them so they can be removable. But again, they fit over any shoe boot, and they're made out of 5.5 ounce cowhide, and everything comes from the U.S. All of our hides come from Nebraska and Texas, and they're hand sewn by a gentleman that's been in the leather business all of his life. So they're all individually hand sewn by a leather making family, I guess you could say. We're in booth 560, so please come check us out. We have different sizes for women, men. We have basically one size, but we have extenders that zip right into the back so we can fit any size calf. So I appreciate you, Becky. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Give her a round of hands. She's new, and I love when I see women in business taking their passions and doing what they want with it. So 516. 560. Over there on the corner. Can't miss it. D3. Thank you. I also want to quickly say thank you to my sponsors, Trace Rio Silver, Fuel Up, MK Collab, Corral Boots. We have so many great supporters, American Hats, that have just really come beside us and elevated everything that we are doing. So without further ado, I'm really excited about to... Oh, and I forgot Nod Apparel and of course, Original Cowgirl Collections are giving our giveaways today, so stick around because I have some of those. I'm honored again. I've just been blessed this year with the guest lineup that we've had and just the support that we get in the Western and rodeo community. And today we are bringing two legends to the stage. Heck, I think we've had legends all week, wouldn't you say?
This has been a pretty star-studded lineup all week long.
Well, and if I had a red carpet, I would roll it out right now. So I'm going to bring to the stage our first guest. He has been part of our they're fighting backstage. He's going first. Well, I'm just going to bring them both up. I've got Mr. Stock Contractor Extraordinaire and Media Extraordinaire, John Growney and Butch Knowles. Please give them a round of applause. Grab a mic, guys. And then I also want to bring to the stage, she's going to sit up here with us, and she's going to bless us with her music and her voice after our show, and that's Miss Lexi Larson. So, Lexi, come on up. You can join in the conversation. Now, how many of you guys know who these gentlemen are up here? We got a few hands out there. Oh, we got someone waving out here in the back. Okay, so John Growney is out of California, Red Bluff, and he has been—I don't want to say been around a long time, but you are a staple. Well, you guys are both staples.
Well, I've not really been around a long time because, and I've told you this before. The reason I'm in the rodeo business is when I was in high school, I fed Christian Brothers stock at Red Bluff, so that was where I was getting my learning ability of being a stock contractor because. Even back then, those bills weighed more than I did, so it gets a little tough.
and you know, these are great, you know, West Coast, Northwest Cowboys. Butch, you hail from Oregon, and gosh, you guys have been around since I can remember. I don't mean that. I grew up with you guys. You are, you know, everything I know about rodeo.
Well, you know, John and I have been good friends for a long time, and like John said, we hung around the Christians and Brothers Rodeo Company pretty much everywhere we went, or, you know, if you were involved in rodeo anywhere in the country, especially in the Northwest, you were involved with Christensen Brothers. So you're right. I remember Becky when she was tall and beautiful. She was just a little
right.
girl.
She and her brother had ponies, and every other kid was
exactly.
envious of their ponies.
Oh, yeah, I know we had Snip. I got the hand-me-down horse, don't you know? And then to the end over here, the beautiful Miss Lexi Larson, she is taking the music industry by storm. You got a beautiful voice, young lady.
Thank you so much.
And where do you hail from?
I'm originally from Ogallala, Nebraska, but I've lived in Nashville for 6 years now.
Awesome. And she, I think you came on stage here at the NFR a few years back, correct?
Yeah, I got to sing the anthem 2 years ago. It was awesome. It was such a great experience.
Well, this is what our show's all about, the stories behind the stories, everything that they do every day that keeps them just in this way of life. And, John, you started... One thing I learned about John, because I had him on the show a few months ago, I didn't realize he was a military guy. He was in the military before he was a cowboy. Or were you a cowboy before you went in the military?
Well, I was a cowboy. I was 21, 22 when I went in the Army, and it was during the Vietnam era, and you know, I was blessed that I got to go to Korea, and I was a food inspector in Korea, so I don't brag that I was a military man because I wasn't in the danger fought where most of those kids were. So I did serve my time, but I didn't have to really worry about anything.
Now, you said you were a food inspector. Tell us a little bit about that, because
well,
I think that's the side of the military most people don't think about.
I have two uncles, and they're both dead now, but they were veterinarians. And so I learned everything from them. And then in our round Red Bluff, the cattle industry is really big. And this Owens family, I grew up around them. And so I learned all about agriculture. And then I took ag in high school. And then ag business was my major in college. And they were looking for a food inspector. They were short food inspectors in Korea. So as soon as I got done with my basic training, they saw that what I was requesting, and I knew what to ask for, and they just took me right from there and sent me to Korea. So, and then I learned to be a food inspector while I was doing it. So,
training on the fly, right?
But I ate really good the whole time I was in Korea.
What I love about John is he's always got a smile on his face. I don't think I've ever seen him without a smile on his face.
I smile when I'm embarrassed. I don't consider myself a legend or a famous rodeo cowboy. My stock is famous, and I just follow after them. So that's how I get my reckoning, I guess.
Well, and we're going to talk about that because we're going to talk first. I was gathering some information today, and then if anybody saw our post, I don't think Butch saw it because he's not on Facebook, or Bookface, as Bob Tallman calls it.
Yeah, no. Facebook and I don't get along.
But I found a clip from Red Bluff, being where John's from, and you were riding saddle bronc on one of my dad's or grandpa's horses,
Brown Tea.
CBS Sports, way back then. Is that when you got your, you were riding then. That was
I believe.
Yeah,
78, somewhere in there.
So
yeah.
Tell me how he did, because Brown Tea was one of the horses you wanted to draw. So what'd you do?
Well, I was actually in the short go, and I think I won second overall in the rodeo. I think I won the short go, and Ivan Danes got me for the rodeo, but it went good. It actually went pretty good.
I posted on John's Facebook, so you'll have Bookface, so you have to go take a look at it. but before you were, this era might know you as the face behind rodeo and the mic and commentating, but you did every event known to man in rodeo and slowly paved your way to your specialty being saddle bronc and winning the world there. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that is true. When we were kids, of course, all we want to do is rodeo. And I didn't come from a rodeo background. My mom and dad had never done it, So it was all just a learning experience for myself and my brother and sister. And so we just, when we entered junior rodeos, we just entered every event. That's just the way it was. And then as it kind of progressed and we weren't very good in the beginning. But as we got to where we were being more competitive and stuff, I just really enjoyed working all the events. So all through high school and college, I worked every event, roped calves and bulldogged and team roped and Bronx bulls and bareback horses. And after college, I had more success in the rough stock events. And the ton events takes a real commitment and a lot of time. And so I had to make a choice really of, which direction I was going to go. So I just stayed riding all three of the rough stock events for the first part of my PRCA career. And so I guess what I tell people, what really helps me in my job today is being an analyst. I had a lot of experience in every event. So it really, I didn't go to college or anything to learn to be in television, but, I have a master's degree in how it really happens
rodeo.
Because,
Hard knocks rodeo.
I actually know some of those situations those guys are in. So it's really been helpful.
Well, but Butch, I want to ask you a few questions, but I have to tell you something. It was a real thrill to meet you. Well, to meet all of you, but you in particular, because I got a funny little story. All of my experience in Western sports came from all my years in the arena management business. And we're not going to put a year on it because I don't want to date you or I. But you are honestly one of the big reasons that I became a rodeo fan and all these years later got involved with Pro Rough Stock and why I'm here every year now. It was because of you on the broadcast when I was back in Lebanon, Ohio, sitting there watching, staying up till God knows when on the East Coast. Your voice, your intelligence made me a fan. I mean, I knew about the rough stock events, but I didn't know anything about roping. I didn't know, but truly, and this is no joke, you drew me in and kept me and educated me. And it was really fascinating. So I'm very interested in your broadcast career because, like you said, you have a master's in it now, even though that's not what you went to school with. But truly, thank you because you are a big reason why I got involved years later because you hooked me in as a fan.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I remember when I was rodeoing, and we were in, I've told this story a few times, but we were in Tucson, Arizona, in the winter rodeos, and I was with a lot of my Canadian friends, and we were at the rodeo. But that was about the time the Winter Olympics were on, and the Americans and the Russians were big, and the Canadians, obviously, were in the, you know, playing a lot of hockey. And I don't know nothing about the game of hockey, nothing. But I was in the room with all those Canadians, and they were, all of a sudden, they were telling me, that, you know, how this all was working, the rules and plays and how they develop. And it started making sense, and I became a hockey fan. And it's like, wow, if you could do that with the sport of rodeo, bridge the gap, and I know everyone here really understands their sport, but there's people that don't. And if you can bridge the gap and maybe, I don't want to say dumb it down, but explain it, simplify it. We have so much terminology that we all understand and know, but not everybody out there understands it. So if you can do it without offending the people that really know the sport, I thought, wow, what a great way to try to do this. So I've always remembered that, and that's kind of the direction I went, you know, and whether it works or not, you never know. But it's been a fun deal. It really has.
That's a great story because, like I said, you truly made me a fan because you educated me and entertained me, and that's tough to do, I think, in that short window of time that you have, because that performance flies along and the broadcast goes along. But you've done a great job. I've always admired you in terms of your broadcast side of things. So it's fascinating.
I've been pretty lucky too. I've worked with some great guys. You know, the first guy I ever did television with was Red Steagall at the College National Finals, and you know what an icon Red was, and so I got to hang around with him. And then my next job that I worked was here with Hadley and Randy in the Dodge National Circuit Finals, and so I was around people that really, really were good at what they did as far as the broadcast side of it, you know. And so I paid attention. I worked with Jack Hannum when helped him put judging seminars on around the country where we'd break down all the events and explain the rules and kind of why this guy should be 85 and why this guy wasn't, you know, 70. And Jack was amazing. He was a teacher before he was a rodeo administrator involved in rodeo. So he really knew how to present things and prepare for things. And so I've just been really lucky to kind of fall into where I was. And then working with Jeff Metters now, and Jeff is absolutely phenomenal. He's one of those guys, if you met him, if he was right there sitting by you, you'd think you'd known him forever. But yet he's just brilliant and really talented. So I've really been on the lucky side of things, honestly.
That's a master's degree with all those teachers, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I lay my claim to fame as being the slack caller with Uncle Randy when we were at the rodeos. That's about all I got to do. So that's great that you got to do that. And, you know, what made your transition? I mean, what really made you decide, okay, I'm done rodeoing and I'm going to go this direction?
You know, it's kind of funny. It was when I got the call to be the analyst at the College National Finals, I was still rodeoing pretty full-time at the time. And I was entered at a lot of rodeos and had two or three decent broncs that I thought I could win something on. And so they called me and asked me if I'd want to do it. And I just had to make it. It was like just like 10 days away from the event. I don't know what happened. Their guy had quit or something. And I told them no. I didn't think I really wanted to do it. They told me what it paid. It was okay, but I thought I could win way more than that riding broncs that weekend. So I told them no, I probably didn't want to do it. So I was sitting behind the bucking chutes with Lewis Field. And Louie and I were sitting there talking, and, you know, we're just talking about everything. And then I kind of told him this story, and he looked at me. He goes, you know, you never know where that might lead. And so I rethought it a little bit, and I thought, you know, maybe I should give it a whirl. So I turned out at the rodeos and went up to Bozeman at the time and was an analyst, and that was really my first try at it. And of course, here we are today about 28 years later. So it did lead in a great direction. I've been lucky.
Did you ever tell Louis thank you for that kind word of advice?
Yeah, every time I talk to him.
Well, yeah. And bless his heart, he's in the battle of his life.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, if you say prayers, lift your prayers up for him.
Absolutely. I'm really worried about my friend Lou. He's got a battle going on with some cancer right now, and there's not a better guy you'll ever meet, period. Yeah.
Well, and there's something to be said about being a cowboy and a cowgirl, because there's something about your grit and your determination and your wherewithal to fight. And I tell you what, outside of maybe a small weight loss, anytime you see a photo of him and his family, their faith and everything about them is just so strong. And I think that's a testament, even not just their family, but family in general in rodeo. I know, but you've seen tragedy in your life, and John, I know you have. And one thing I really want to touch on, and this is what I love about the Western way of life in rodeo, is I remember being a little girl, and I was about 10, when things went south for our company. And I remember getting, you know, when we lost our stock on the Siskiyous. And I remember being little, and I remember conversations, and I remember hearing, how are we going to carry on the rodeo in Roseburg, our hometown rodeo? I want you to know that our hometown rodeo that year was carried on because that man right there stepped up as a friend of my dad and showed up with his stock. So he is just someone that I respect highly, and it's that smile and that heart.
Well, you know, I've told you, see, when I'm talking to you, I feel like I'm repeating myself, but you know, start with, we named Grounding Brothers Rodeo Company because Christian Brothers Rodeo Company. When I was a kid, that's all I could look up to was Christian Brothers. So I always knew Christian Brothers. And then when we got in the rodeo business, it was just, you know, timing in our lives to help Bobby with, everybody in that family to take our stock. And we had a load of good bulls and good horses. And we just started going to rodeos with Christian Brothers. And we did for 2 years. And I told you this before, the rodeos that we have today were all Christian Brothers rodeos. And when you guys, you know, when your family went out of business, we were just left standing there, and we inherited all these great rodeos that Christian Brothers had. And it's been quite a learning experience and survival experience getting here today. But the rodeo business as a stock contractor is really tough to be in, and it takes a lot of logistics and money and good people around you, and it's continuous, and there's a lot of stress in the rodeo business, but because of your family, we're successful today.
Well, I appreciate that, but in your own right, I mean, if you, I was doing some you know, refreshing, and I go back and I look at your stock, and I want to talk about the stock because the stock needs to get highlighted. I'm a fan of the horses. I love bulls, but I'm a horse girl, and John Grounding has got some great bucking horses to his name and his and their reputation. And just to rattle off a few, we've got Raggedy Ann went to the NFR 4 times, Beaver Fever went 6 times, Bittersweet went 4 times, L Twive Sherlock was 2010 go round buckle winner. You've got West Point Galley won Bronc of the Year, and
you know, it's the bad thing about rodeo is it's current history. When, you know, you're feeding off of what happens today. When I bought Bob Cook out, at one time we had 10 bareback horses come to the NFR because he had a great pen of horses already. And then the ranchers like the Marvels and people in Lakeview, Oregon and everything started sending us horses. This Jim Owens from Red Bluff, he sent me a horse we called Captain Jack, and he went to the finals probably 12 times. So when you're talking about horses that are on that list, you're not, you know, we when your parents and everybody were in the rodeo business, we started in 1979, and we've always had some really great horses, but we were blessed by people. There's something about being young, and you're trying to get to the top, and everybody gets around you, and I could name 20 people that if one of them hadn't been there, I'd have never made it in the rodeo business. So it's the people that surround you to bring you up, and they're the ones that get all the credit.
Well, and I think both of you, especially, you know, Butch, you being a analyst and commentator, over the years and the span of rodeo, the stock has changed. I mean, they're still the same, but with the breeding programs and everything else. Let's talk about that a little bit because a lot of those rodeo fans may be here from way back, but they may not be. What's changed in all of that?
Well, I think it's really changed. It's amazing how much it's changed, you know. And it's all because of all the breeding programs that have taken place. Years ago, I think probably when your grandfather started that business, there were ways to get horses. For some reason, horses, they could get horses. They didn't have to raise them. They could go buy horses, you know.
Indian reservation.
Wherever they came from, but they were great horses. And that kind of went away. And I don't know if it was through breeding programs out in the country or whatever, but it was really hard to get those big, stout bucking horses.
You know, in my career, when I first got in it, Bob DeBraga, he was running the ZX and the Viewpoint. Well, they had lots of horses that were bucking their cowboys off, and you'd get them when they're about 5 or 6, 7
yeah.
years old because they were worried about them horses hurting somebody. And so you get a lot of horses. The Owens has always had horses. The Marvels always had horses that could buck. And when you got them, they had the age on them for you to go on with them, and they turned out to be good horses. But the word liability, got into the rodeo business when these ranchers started realizing if they bucked that cowboy off and they knew that horse bucked, and if they hurt that cowboy, they were liable for that kid. And they could, like the ZX and the Viewpoint, they were owned by an insurance company. And they told Bob DeBrega, if that horse humps up at all, you get rid of him. So we never, they started breeding away from those kind of horses. Because at one time, especially if you talk about the Marvels and the ZX and the Viewpoint, they needed a horse that they could ride all day long and ride hard all day long. And he had to have a lot of heart and stamina, and that's where that buck came from. So in my time, I started noticing, and I almost reacted too late in the horse business, but all of a sudden, we weren't getting the horses anymore. We used to get a load of horses every year from those people I just mentioned, and now we're lucky if we get one horse a year from somebody. So you have to raise your own horses. And I've got a partner now, Tim Bridwell, and that's his expertise. So I have a guy in the horse business that really knows horses, and he's doing a really great job. And then Don Kish is like a brother, and he's always been with me. He's started a bull program that today, I know Butch and I, for every one bull we got on that you're seeing buck today, you got on 10 bulls that never bucked at all like these bulls.
Absolutely.
So these kids are getting on bulls. They're the easiest bull was probably the rankest bull when we were riding.
That's what I was going to jump in and ask. Explain, you know, I think a lot of people know kind of in the thoroughbred industry, the bloodlines. Is it similar in the bucking horse, bucking bull?
It's exactly.
Is it identical?
But you got to find that right, Nick. And then, you know, like Calgary has the best horse program there is going, and they might breed that same mare to that same stud and one year get the rankest horse ever, and getting the next colt will not buck at all. So it's just like running horses.
And I think the percentages on horses are lower than the percentages on bulls as far as bloodlines and bucking, because you look at the bucking bull of the year, Don Kish owns him, and John. Well, you know, there was a bull that Bob Cook had years ago named Oscar that was just the most famous bull in our day. Donnie Gay, I believe, was, what, 94 on him?
Yep.
And very seldom got ridden. The bull, the bucking bull of the year this year, traces right back to Oscar. He goes right back to that bloodline.
Right. I don't know what the percentage is, and I'd probably be wrong, but I would say 50% of the bulls that are bucking today are out of the Oscar breeding.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
And we talk about the bulls.
I wanted to tell you one more thing.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, John.
So, Oscar had a calf called Oscar's Velvet. Here's this lousy bronc rider that bull riders don't like at all, and he rides the shit out of this bull. So, anyway, and I'll never forget that. Where was it, Salinas?
No, it was at Longview, Washington.
Yeah.
It's kind of a funny story. I'll tell it real quick. I was out changing sprinkler pipe in the hayfield, and my... Mary, my wife, comes to me, and I ask, well, what bronc do I have at Longview? It's up near Portland, Oregon, and she told me, and I thought, well, that's pretty good. I could maybe win something on him, and I go, what do I have in the bull riding? And I used to ride a lot of bulls, but I always just around in the Northwest. I'd get on 30 or 40 a year is all, but she goes, well, you've got Oscar. She goes, you think you can ride Oscar? I go, hell no, I can't ride Oscar. Are you kidding me? Well, in those days, you couldn't turn out in any event because they disqualified from the whole rodeo, And so, of course, I go to Portland. I'm thinking I'm just a dead man. But I go down there, so they're getting ready to buck him. And he'd only been ridden one time. Lyle Sankey was the only guy that had actually rode this bull at that point. And he was really, he hadn't been bucking bull of the year yet. So he was really, that was going to be his year. He was going to be bucking bull of the year. So they run him all in the chute, and I'm getting on him. And I don't know what happened. It's just like it all just kind of clicked, and I'm warming my rope up thinking, well, he's not that big. He didn't look that, you know, he looked huge wiping all those guys out, and I'm getting on him thinking, well, he didn't. He's not really that big. I think maybe I might have to try this one on. And anyway, it all worked out, and I rode him, and because I rode him, he never got bucking bull of the year that year, so Bobby Christensen was not very happy with
me. In fairness to that bull, though, he didn't win bucking bull of the year, but that same year at the NFR, he won bucking bull of the NFR.
And so he was bucking bull of the year the next year. So he was a tremendous bull, and I have no idea how I rode him either.
Honestly. Well, we're picking Dad up from the airport after the show, so I'll have to...
yeah, you need to tell him.
Well, and you know, it was funny because you guys are really involved... Outside of the arena, you have your broadcasting, you have your stock contracting. Lexi, you grew up in a rodeo family as well, correct? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I grew up in Nebraska, but my family's all in Wyoming and South Dakota. So my mom was Miss Rodeo Wyoming, and Marvin Garrett is my godfather, and so I got to watch him all the time. Yeah. And so it's just always been a part of my family growing up, and I'm just honored to be here and talk about it.
I know
you guys
great.
Especially.
I
this is cool.
I didn't know that.
I'm going to have to brag about it. They're going to be like, dang.
But
you know, remember, Butch and I weren't raised. Butch is a ranching family out of Butter Creek, Oregon, somewhere, wherever, Hefner.
Yeah.
And I'm a car dealer's son.
Say, you're going to be a car dealer.
There's no way I'm supposed to be in the rodeo business. But the big guy upstairs,
had
I swear, plans. He had a plan, and here I am.
Isn't it funny when you just let someone else guide it? You just go, oh, well, what the heck. But
I have any control of it.
Well, and it was funny because, you know, everything that we do here is for folks like me and Lexi. It's to keep the heritage alive and the stories alive. And for kids that are coming up, we don't want to lose the stories. And you guys have so many great stories. So I want to hear some more. Share with our listeners because they'd love to hear these stories.
Well, Butch's stories he can't tell. So I got to tell you this. One time, Butch and all, what are all your friends? Tommy and Dave. And you, I think you had Pat Beard with you.
Pat Beard,
well,
yeah.
My dad had to go. I don't know if you got hauled, but Pat and somebody else got hauled to jail that night. My dad had a lot of influence. So he just went and got him, and it all went away. But, you know, there were kids just showing up in Red Bluff for the first time. So it was something to. I always remember this when I'm, you know, I was older than they were, but I always remember. Rodeo kids are the greatest well-mannered kids in the world, but the world is so new to them when they get out there that it just gets bigger than life, and sometimes they get a little out of control.
Is it kind of like a preacher's kid? They get out and they get a little bit crazy?
Yeah, they do. They do. They tend to get a little crazy.
But rodeo is a great way of life. You know it, and I know it, and I've been very blessed. I've never felt like I've had a job. Even though you drive all night and you work all day and you just do something, but it never feels like a job.
And just keep at it. Well, and speaking of, you know, the stories and the lineage, I'm going to touch just a minute. We had your son on our stage here on Monday.
Oh, Blake?
And, oh, yeah. Blake was on here. And let me tell you, Blake is following right in your footsteps. He is great on stage.
Is he
and
full of it, is he?
Oh, my gosh. I'm like, huh, he must have been hanging out with his dad.
You dad.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm pretty lucky too. We have a cattle ranch when I'm not doing this, and that's the real world for me. All this is just kind of fun to get to do what I get to do and still be involved in the sport that was so good to me. So I'm pretty lucky. And then both my sons, Brian and Blake, are right there on the ranch with me. And you know, not many families get to hang together and work together and get to do that like we do in the rural life. You know. Doesn't matter if you're rodeoing
like
or ranching or anything. It's this Western lifestyle, and you know, we're all lucky to get to be part of this. We really are, and it's something that, you know, you love to hang on to and pass it on to your kids, and hopefully they'll pass it on to theirs. And you know, it's sure we're lucky. Sometimes, you know, when you're out there, you know, prices aren't great, or you're in a snowstorm and trying to get cows in, or you know, it can be challenging, and you have to think back and think, man, I wish I'd have paid more attention when I was in school, but it's awesome. I wouldn't trade it.
Well, so is Blake shared with us that he and his wife had a baby. Is this your first grandbaby?
Actually, second. My oldest son and his wife had a baby girl a year and a half ago. So yeah. So now Blake and his wife Whitney have a little baby girl. So I have two girls to deal with, and I'm not used to girls. So it's that's going to be challenging, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. They'll steal your heart.
They already have. You know, I've got one quick story. It's one I can tell. Oh. John will appreciate it. The first year I got hired to come down to the Wrangler National Finals to be the analyst, and it was with Hadley and Randy, and I was just so nervous. And that I was up. It was November, and I was hunting elk. And so I made a hunt, and I was done. I was walking down the road with my gun over my shoulder, and I was practicing talking to Hadley and Randy, you know. So I'm just going, well, thank you, Hadley, thank you. Yeah, so I thought, you know, and then I would look to my left, well, Randy, you know, and I would answer all these fictitious questions in my mind. I was just trying to think, man, I was just scared to death. And so I'm walking down the road, and I'm talking to Randy and Hadley, and I look up, and there's this 13-year-old kid sitting on a stump. And he sees me coming towards him, talking to two guys that aren't around me. And I just, and I mean, his eyes were this big around when he looked at me, and I just looked at him and said, hey, how's it going? And then I just kept walking. I'd like to know what he thinks today. You know, oh, I laughed about that.
That's that guy. I saw walking
down
the street.
Yeah, that is a crazy man talking to two of his friends that weren't anywhere near him.
And now he sees you on TV. And
well, who
that
knows?
That was the guy that I saw wandering down the road.
That's him. That's the guy, Dad. Yeah.
And he probably thought, well, maybe he wasn't crazy. I think that, yeah. Well, so share a little bit how much over the course of the years it's changed down here as far as media coverage and everything as far as the recognition that rodeo is getting.
That's Butch's deal. I do.
Well,
you know, life is changing, but I went to China about 5 years ago with the American Quarter Horse Racing Association, and everybody in China, and I'll guarantee you everybody, from the guy sweeping the streets to the richest guy in one of those buildings, they knew two words, and that's American cowboy. And so the greatest icon in the world is the American cowboy, and we have a hard time selling it as rodeo.
You know, Keith Mundy was on here a couple of days ago, and we were talking about that, the icon, the cowboy hat and the man underneath it or the woman underneath it.
Every little kid, when you're – I'm interrupting. But
No.
When you're at an airport, and it happens almost every time at an airport, a little kid will go, hey, Mom, there's cowboy. You know, so everybody recognizes the cowboy. And I have an uncle. He goes, we're the only sport that wears their uniform outside of the field. And sometimes we're not represented very well. And it so it has a swing back and forth that, you know, you like them, you not like them. And so I try and remind all these kids that are rodeoing to show up in their cowboy hat, show up in their long, you know, their Wranglers on or whatever they're doing. But don't come in surfing pants and surfing shirts and long hair and a beard, because people look up to the American cowboy and they want to see John Wayne every time they see a cowboy.
That's a good word. Well, and Lexi, what was it like for you growing up, you know, with your passion for music? Did you always have a passion for Western music?
Yes, I've loved country music my whole life. I started singing when I was 2 years old in the back of my mom's pink Cadillac. She had a pink Cadillac. And I knew all the words to I'll Always Love You at 2 years old. And so ever since then, I've just loved country music. I've loved everything about it. I love following a dream, you know, like rodeo and everything. I like that feeling of knowing that I'm achieving something as time goes on. So,
tell us a little bit about your career path here, because you know we've heard from these two gentlemen and explain. And you're on a similar path, only in the music industry, which is I'm pretty familiar with, as we discussed. But tell us about your path to kind of where you're at now and where you're headed, where you want to go.
Well, I've been traveling. I started traveling to Nashville when I was 15, and it was my dream to be a big country music singer. And so right after high school, I moved there. And for the past 6 years, I've lived there and done things that when I was 15, I thought that would be good, that would be done. I'd got the dream and all that stuff. But as time has gone on, after 6 years of being there, I've just learned and found out what's important to me as an artist. And as a person too, that finally, after 6 years of being there, I feel like I'm ready to go. So that's kind of it.
You're in the right town, as we talked about. My fiance and I live there, and it's you're in what I call Hollywood for the country music industry.
Okay.
So, and you surround yourself, it's like John said, you surround yourself with the right people, you will get town. But if, like John said, if you surround yourself with the right people, and Butch can attest to that too, you'll
right.
get where you want to go.
Even if they're not there.
I got a story, though.
Even if I'm not there yet.
One of the last bulls I ever got on was at Salinas. And Butch is right on top of the chute. And Butch always made light of everything. He always was the clown and stuff. And then I never took anything serious either. And I always remember, we're laughing, and I'm getting on a bull. But it just made it fun to be the last bull I was ever getting on.
That's awesome.
Well, now share with us, if you will, from a competitor standpoint to now you stock contracting, broadcast media, our cowboys today. The level of competition has changed, obviously. It's always been competitive, but I think we've definitely changed the caliber in the game, one with the breeding stock and now with the most cowboys and cowgirls are pretty specific on what they're there for.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, like any sport, it's evolved. And it evolved when John and I were competing, we evolved from the 60s, you know. I mean, it just kept going up. The bar kept getting higher and higher, and as the money got better. And you look at these kids now, you know, they're in a gym even the ones down here competing, they're in a gym a couple hours every day while they're here, 90% of them. You know, there's a few that aren't still, but most of them, it's serious business, and they take it as a serious business. And, you know, I mean, they've got a chance to win $250,000 every year doing what they like to do, and that's huge. And if they don't put the effort into it, somebody else will, and they'll beat them. And so, you know, I'm really impressed. They're so much more committed. And, you know, the game, it's still the same game, but the level of competition is tremendous what they can do in every event, right across the board. You know, some events have evolved, you know, the bareback riding compared to what it used to be in the early days. The Riggins have changed that event to where it's a little different. Bart Saddlebronk riding, it's no different now than when they were getting on in the 60s. It's exactly the same. The difference is the horses are just tremendous. They're just that much better. It used to be we'd go to a rodeo, and there every contractor would have, you know, if you had five good Saddlebronks, really good NFR quality Saddlebronks in your herd, you were pretty solid. I mean, you were set, and they'd buck them two times at a rodeo, so you'd have 10 opportunities. There might be 80 guys entered, so 10 guys would have a chance to win, and the other guys, you know, you'd have to scrape it out and hope you snuck in there. Now it's just, you go to a rodeo, there's eight good broncs in a pen of horses out of 10, and maybe two that you might not be able to place on. So your chances to win, just because of the programs that have been put together and the breeding programs, it has come so far. And like John says, you know, the horse programs they're great, but you don't know what you have in a bucking horse until he's 5-6 years old, probably. It's not like, you know, a bull, you can dummy buck him and stuff and kind of know they've got some potential. A horse, you know, they got to be pretty mature. So they're into him 5 or 6 years before they know if that program's working or not. So it's a huge commitment by these guys, and they've done a great job.
You bring up a good point about the stock, and explain to the listeners a little bit about, I mean, I'm familiar with it, but somebody asked me the other night, and I couldn't honestly answer it. Explain how, especially here at the NFR, the difference between the hoppers and you mentioned the eliminator pen. Can you explain that from the rough stock side of things for the listeners?
Let Butch, because Butch is my hero also. I just told him. Just a while ago, we had a bull out called Crystal Deal a couple of performances ago, and I was watching it on TV because in the place that we're at the arena, you can't hear anything going on. You just watch it. And so Butch leads Donnie into this thing. He goes, Donnie, if I had that bull, what do you think, he said, about pulling that rope back a little bit? And so there's a lot of things that these guys used to have to think about because they got on a lot of eliminators back in the old days. And so Donnie took off from there, and this Crystal Deal, he's one of those kind of bulls where you want to pull that rope back a little bit because those kids were getting right up on the shoulders, and when that bull shoves off, he was coming backwards. And they said, it's going to put this kid right on his head, and sure enough, it put Joe Frost right on the bull's head. So that's what Butch is good at. And so now, whatever that question was, you take
Keep that up for you, Butch.
Well, getting to back to explain, you know, there. The National Finals Rodeo, when you pick the stock for them, you know, the event directors usually do the picking. They may call the other contestants up, or they may know a kid in California that rodeos more around John Grounder. So you try to get all the information on the horses you can get. And I'll just use the Saddlebronk riding for an example. And so then they'll pick the very best out of that and bring them here. Well, then you try to match the pins up. You know, each night there's 15 horses that are going to be out, plus a couple of re-rides. So you try to give everybody the opportunity. So the hoppers means those are the horses that just jump and kick and have a lot of timing and not really difficult to ride. And so you try to put a whole pin of 15 of those together. And the eliminators are the ones when those kids call back and you tell them what they got. They're kind of like I was when I had Oscar. It's like, I don't think I can ride him, but I'm going to have to go try anyway. Well, you get a whole pin of those, and you put them together. And then what we call the TV pin, and I refer to that just because, you know, when I was competing, they only televised one performance of the Wrangler National Finals Rodeo, the last one. And so you put the very best, the bucking horses of the year and the rankest best horses in there because they were the ones that were showcasing what you had. So we always called that the TV pin, and so it's still referenced that way. But you just kind of match all of them up and try to give them all an opportunity, and then all those horses will buck twice. So that's kind of how it lays out.
Very good, very good. Thank you for explaining that.
Well, and my question is when you look at the caliber of bulls through the bucking programs and the caliber of horses, Do you ever think that, and this, you probably get asked this a lot, do you ever think it's going to get to a point where you're going to have such good bucking stock, it's going to detour the Cowboys because there's not going to be one to be able to ride them?
I think we're already there. The only thing that these bulls could get better if we could teach them how to do cartwheels or something like that, because, you know, and in fairness to these kids, like we were just talking earlier, there never were continuously ranked bulls coming at you. You got the place on bulls that might jump and kick in a circle right there at the bucking chutes, and you'd place on them. And now you don't even see that. That's a re-ride nowadays. So these kids are getting on bulls. So they have, you know, we think that our society is not as tough as it used to be, and it's probably not. But those kids nowadays, they're so much smarter than we were. When they're in trouble, they're checking out. They're going to, hey, I'll play again tomorrow, and I'm going to be safe, and I'm going to heal up. But I think we were dumb enough to hang on until they got underneath the bull, and he was walking all over you. But anyway, I know that today, the bucking bulls, without any doubt, with you know, you watch the NFRs in 20 years ago, and now these bulls are rank. And sometimes I don't know if they bring all the rank ones. When you watch the PBR, those guys that can have money are buying the rank ones. And so when you see a short go in the PBR, you're seeing the rankest of the rank bulls, and you don't see very many guys ride them.
I've been to, you know, some of the PBR events, and this isn't anything negative about them, but it's qualified rides are kind of, you know, that's a rarity. You know, if you're bucking 45 bulls and you get 10 qualified rides, wow, that's a good show. And I've seen that just in my short time.
It's a rarity in the PRCA too, though.
Yeah, it is, and like John said, you know, I'm sure there's a booth here that sells some of those old rodeo videos, you know, from the 80s and 90s, and you go look at them. Yeah, but go look at them.
They're great. They're
it's amazing,
the long
though,
hair.
How the stock, and it was good then, you know, when Tuff and Lane and all them were going, there were lots of good bulls, but there were pins in there, a lot of pins, to where, you know, they may make one round and jump and kick out of it, and they had a chance to place, and that, you know, that's not the case anymore. Every single time they step on, and even if they ride them, they still got to get off them without getting just absolutely hammered. And it, you know, the longevity, it really shortens their career. Yeah.
Now,
I mean, it's tough. It's really tough. Those kids, and you take a kid like Sage Kimsey or Cody Taylor just having a phenomenal week here. Holy cow. Sage Kimsey's riding percentage is 72%. That's unbelievable, really. That's riding, you know, 7 out of 10 bulls in today's game.
Yeah.
That's how good he really is.
Yeah. And John, you mentioned you think we're there, especially with the bulls. I mean, how far behind or are we there with the horses in the rough stock events?
Well, that'd be Butch's answer to that, but we still got a long ways to go. I mean, because there's a lot of good horses out there, but they're not the numbers. Everybody's owns a good bull. My partner, Don Kish, started raising bucking bulls almost 30 years ago, and he was one of the few guys who was doing it by himself, and he's got just an outstanding herd of bulls right now. And so now H.D. Page and Chad Berger and, God, you can go on this, Jerry Nelson, and everybody's raising all these great bulls. In reality, there's probably four or five stock contractors raise bulls that could put this whole thing on and throw everybody off.
There's a quick story. There's a friend of Clint Johnson's. He's a geneticist. He's a veterinarian, but he's a geneticist, and they're cloning now. Cloning. I call him Dr. Frankenstein. I don't even know what his real name is. But, you know, they've cloned, like, some of the greatest, you know, one of the best Bronx when I rode that Calgary owned at that time was a horse called Go Wild, and they've got him cloned. Clint Johnson has three Go Wild stallions, and, I mean, they're just exactly
so
look just like him. And, you know, they've cloned over 100 different animals now. I mean, 100. And... It doesn't mean a lot.
But the cloning is finding some of those old ones. Donnie Kish, he cloned a bull that he called Cash, and his calves look exactly like him, but I think one of them bucked and the other two didn't buck. So
yeah.
It's something that's inside the heart and the mind that I don't think you can clone to get
so
the bucker.
I don't think so either. Well, let's touch real quick. We have about 10 minutes left about the NFR right, WNFR right now. Lexi, what was it like for you when you got to sing in front of that whole crowd?
Oh, it was such a good day. It was such a good day. That day, also, Shania was there. Shania is my favorite and the reason I wanted to be in Tennessee when I was little. And so she was there that night, too. So right before I went out to sing, I got to meet her. So it was just a banner day. My whole family was there, and my hands were shaking pretty good, but it was really fun.
Well, and we've had a great rodeo so far this year. We had Emily Charlesworth on. She trick rode the other night at the finals. It's just something to be said, and I'm going to root toot again for the new Miss Rodeo America. She's from Washington and from Spokane, from my rodeo, so that's the first, so I'm excited about that. We've got, you know, Blake and Trevor and Dakota, they've had some good runs. Where are they standing at right now?
Well, Blake's placed a couple times, but he's missed two steers, so he's just got three rounds to try to win as much as he can. Trevor Knowles, my nephew, really was got in a great position by last night. He was in the lead in the average by quite a little bit. He missed his steer last night, so his chances probably winning world title. Actually, Dakota Eldridge, though, the Nevada boy, he's setting awfully good. He's in a good spot right now. With three rounds left, he's solid. So, yeah, all the events, it's just, you know, the fight between Casey Field and Stephen Peebles. That's a tough one for me because
Stephen was on here. He's a Northwest Cowboy.
Yeah.
I love Casey and their family.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I know Stephen's story and how much he's been hurt and his, you know, challenge to get here, but I also know the mindset of
right.
trying to stay focused when your dad's going through the battle that
Casey's
dad's going
yeah,
through.
Yeah, you
so
know that's got to play a part.
You know, if they both came out on top, one and two, either way, I'm going to be real happy for them because, I mean, they both are just, they are grit to the core. So
absolutely. And when you talk about professionals and professional athletes, I've known both Casey and for a long time now, and those guys do, you know, you talk about these guys are in the gym 2 hours a day, they're working out. I mean, I was on the road with these guys, especially Steven, for years. And, you know, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, it'd be nothing to walk by leaving the hotel, and he's in the gym. And I gave him a hard time on Friday when it was Rough Stock Friday. I said, you know, I think your hobby is rehab because, you know, it's amazing to see. And I think that's a testament to not only his physical shape but his mental attitude and his strength because I may get the numbers wrong here, but I think Steven said he was in 33-some rodeos to get here, and the rest of those kids were over 90.
Yeah, and you know, that was one of the questions that was hanging out there about Steven. Obviously, he's got the talent to do it, but, you know, he got hurt here a year ago. He got a compression fracture, and he's back in the third round. He came back in late February, maybe early March, way behind the ball, worked his way all the way up to the top 15, and then in July, his hand got popped out of the rigging after the whistle. He won Livingston. He lit on his back and ruptured an artery, and his lungs were filling up with blood. He almost died. I mean, literally, they were going to go to Billings.
Right.
He was going to go to the hospital, and Brian Baines was going to go on a rodeo, and Steven said, well, just take me to Billings. And Brian Baines says, no, you need to go to a hospital now. And he took him over the hill just a short ways to Bozeman.
Right.
That's the only reason he's even alive.
Right. They know he'd have died. If he'd have fallen asleep over on the passenger side,
that would have been
in the morning, he'd have been dead.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he came back through the fall and got back, you know, into the top 15 the last weekend of the rodeo season. But my question was, his body went through a lot in 12 months. Could he stand the physical rigors of the National Finals Rodeo getting on all 10 like he's doing? Obviously, that question's been answered now.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? But that was the question. And so, you know, I mean, it's a battle. It is fun to watch. It really is. No matter how it comes out, it's the way it ought to be.
It's been a joy, and we haven't seen the end of it yet. But we go back to this kind of unifying theme today. It's the people in your life and who you surround yourself with. And I'm dear friends with Brian Bain as well. And that's a prime example of being surrounded by the right. Because Steven, God love him, he's stubborn. No, well, I'm good. Let's go. Brian's a little bit older, and has kind of brought Steven under his wing through the years. And that it doesn't get any better than being with the right people, because Brian made the right decision by far.
Well, and to talk about the people you surround yourself with, I just want to touch on this real quick before we end the hour. And when we end the hour, Lexi's going to come on stage and she's going to perform for the next half hour, so please stick around for that because you'll be blessed by her voice. John, I want to just touch just a minute on how supportive you are for Donna Lynn and Western Wishes, and because she's our guest co-host and she's not here with us today. But we try to encourage everything Western Wishes. And you are so supportive of that, you and Elsie and Clyde and everything in the history of Lane Frost and the memory of him. And, you know, I just triggered me as we're sitting here talking about Stephen, because Stephen was so close to being another Lane Frost story. But he survived, fortunately. And what does that part of rodeo mean to you? Because that is about the family that we all are, this big, small family.
Well, the Lane Frost deal is a different story from Western Wishes, but, you know, who in their right mind can't be there for a child that's in trouble? And, you know, I'm probably the most emotional person that lives in the, you know, I'm supposed to be a tough cowboy, but my emotions run high. And when I'm around kids, I know they need all the support they can get. And, you know, and most of those kids are in trouble. I have a niece right now that Jim knows really well, that she's 37 years old and she's fighting cancer. And that, you know, and children, when they're fighting something like that, they just don't know. It's a sad deal. So I can't imagine anybody not being involved. And so sometimes Donna Lynn wears me out, but she...
Oh, we love Donna Lynn.
She's got a great program, and I'm there for her when she needs it.
Awesome. Well, I don't know how much time we have left, but I think we've got about 5 minutes. What would you leave with our audience and those that are walking around that maybe haven't been able to... They love the rodeo lifestyle and what they see right now, but share with them what is it that just has blessed you so much over these years and why you just love the life that you live?
Well, what I like about the American cowboy is the manners that he has and what he represents, and the strength of America is in the American cowboy. And when my uncle, he was in the World War One, and he was 21 years old, and he was the oldest guy in his platoon, so he was the sergeant. But he said when he picked kids to go with him, when they had to go somewhere where they know life and death awaited, he picked a ranching kid and a farm kid, because, you know, he knew that they would stay and fight and that they were tough. And that's what I think the American cowboy represents, and I love being around it. I'm probably the greatest fan of rodeo. When I'm at the finals here, it just tickles me. Everybody knows, you know, they want to know what I'm laughing about. I'm laughing that I'm enjoying being somewhere so much that it's the greatest place that you can be at anywhere in the world.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And you do. You always have a great attitude. And you rub off on everyone. Let me just tell you that. How about you, Butch?
Well, I agree with John. And it's not just rodeo. It's the Western lifestyle. And I remember when Blake was in high school, and he played all sports all through high school. And he was really a pretty good athlete. And he made what they call the Shrine Team in Oregon, which is an all-star, all-state football team, and they play a football game in the summer, the west side of Oregon against the east side. Well, the west side of Oregon, if you're not from Oregon, is, you know, it's pretty much all cities, and it's the west side of Oregon. But on the east side, you know, they're all
Washington.
Small communities. It's little towns, you know, and ranches and ranch kids and country kids. And so we were at the they had a barbecue for the families of both teams before the game, the day before the game. And we were there. Mary and I were there. And so here came the west side of Oregon, Portland, Eugene, all that. They pull in, and those kids get off the bus, and they couldn't even communicate. They were just like, they didn't know how to communicate. And here came the east side kids coming in off their bus, and those kids got off, and all those kids got out and mingled with all the people, and they'd come up and talk to you and introduce themselves. I mean, there was just a different lifestyle the way they were raised. And the west side kids, I'm sure they thought they were the biggest hicks in the world when they would see us on the east side, you know. But I thought we were so lucky to raise our kids under that atmosphere. And that's the reason all this works down here. It's a great way of life. So I'm very proud to be part of it.
Lexi, what's it meant to you growing up this way?
It just meant a lot to watch people, I guess, succeed in this way of life, but then the heart that just comes with it. I just think that's my favorite part about it, is just watching the heart of the people and the try, and that's my favorite part.
I'm going to really throw a question at her. You think that we can get that back in our generation? You think we can woo those folks back that are coming up behind us and get them to love the Western way again?
Yes, I really do think so. I think this, and I think seeing... I think, and I can relate it to country music with the trucks and the trail gates and all that stuff. I feel like it's coming back. I feel that we've gotten there, and we're going to come back to the real country side of life and the real heart of being from the West, me anyways. But I feel like it can come back. I really do.
Like Maria says, we were country and country wasn't cool.
Yeah.
Because I've got a generation
of
kids that, you know, my daughter has fallen in love with it. My son, not so much. But you couldn't get him to listen to country music and now that's all he listens to. He you know, the rap and all that kind of stuff, he's, he's, you know, so.
Well, and I think, like, all the trucks and tailgate songs brought all those people back, and now they can move it into the real country music, and they can all go that way.
And I guess that's where we'd be an influence,
right?
I know you listen to that truck and tailgate
I'm gonna
music
tell you
a lot.
Probably the greatest show I've ever seen is I went in May, the Garth Brooks show in Sacramento.
My gosh, they are so good.
And this Garth Brooks gets up there, and this crowd's roaring. And, you know, they know him better than I do, but and I like his music. But he plays one song, then he gets up on the mic and he goes, "If you guys don't like rodeo and cowboys, you came to the wrong place." And then he broke into the Beaches of Cheyenne, and I stood up like everybody else. And for 3 hours, I was standing. That's how great that guy is.
And he came back at the perfect time, too.
Yeah, ironically, huh?
Well, and I remember when he came to Spokane, he had like a two-day tour set. He ended up being there for 5 days. He just extended his stay there, and they sold out every single night.
Yeah, he's done that. He did a little run like that in Cincinnati, too. But before we get out of your way, tell us a little bit about your debut single.
Oh, yes. I wrote a song with two of my girlfriends, a breakup song, of course.
It's a good one.
Thank you. it's called You Can Leave. It was a song that took us 30 minutes to write one day, and it made it to the country music Billboard chart, and
Woo!
The video was on GAC and all that fun stuff. But it was just a song that came straight from my heart that really worked, and I loved it.
Well, I'm excited to let our audience here and everyone around.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that's it for today, and we appreciate everyone stopping by. These are legends, and they're all right. She's going to be a legend in the country music, so keep an eye out for her. So please give Butch Knowles and John Growney and Lexi Larson a round of applause.
Thank you.
We'll see you tomorrow. Now, remember, tomorrow is at 9:30. We have got Justin Kohler and with the documentary of Casey Tibbs and the Floating Horses. And Cole Elsher. So be sure that you tune or come by tomorrow, 9:30, early show, because we got to get over to the Cowboy Reunion. So thank you again, and God bless you, and we'll see you tomorrow.
She's Gone Country with Becky is proud to have as our charity team Western Wishes, making the dreams of seriously ill children and young adults who love the Western way of life to come true. Western Wishes, leaving the legacy of goodwill the cowboy way. Find out more at westernwishes.org.
Grace Rio Silver was founded in 1997. Our goal today remains the same as it was back then, to provide you, our customer, with a quality buckle. Call today and visit with one of our family design experts about your next trophy buckle. From 1 to 100, each is individually made by hand, one at a time. Remember, at Trace Rios, our only limit is your imagination. Trace Rio Silver, Llano, Texas. 800-550-7535. Or you can find us on the web at TraceRioSilver.com. Proud to be a part of She's Gone Country with Becky.
Enough to venture out of the feed room into the vast expansive universe called the alleyway. Well, one of the kittens made the delightful discovery that a chicken would run from it. It had to be a wonderful boost to its confidence, and this kitten was having a blast maneuvering the chicken around a bale of hay. Well, while this was going on, another kitten, much smaller, was bravely making its debut, venturing out. And just in time to get chili rolled by the crazed chicken squawking in terror as it fled from the barn. The poor little kitten left scratch marks in the concrete as it fled back to the safety of the furthest, darkest corner in the feed room. What a rude response to its first attempt to venture out into life. Well, the truth is, venturing out into life is not safe. But the most dangerous thing any of us could ever do after life chili rolls us is to retreat to our dark corners and wave the white flag. Life is to be lived, and we can't live it if we're waiting for the insurance policy that guarantees we won't lose or get our heart broke or be freight trained. If that little kitten was to never venture out again, it would remain in that dark corner, never grow healthy, never be strong. Same with us. Isn't it kind of amazing that sometimes what's dangerous is actually healthy, and what looks safe is actually a death trap? Okay, so you're in your dark corner right now. Tell God how you feel. Ask Jesus to give you renewed hope and courage, and then step back out. What matters is not how great you become, but that you simply become.
I'm Crystal Lyons, and this is Cowgirl Logic. For more, you can go to cowgirllogic.net.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Discover the mysteries of cosmetic dentistry. For all the insider tips and wellness solutions, tune in to Get Your Smile On with Dr. Joel Gould, Wednesdays at 7 p.m.
4radio.com.